realize, acknowledge, and understand the essence of fasting. It is not just a few rituals, and it is not just, you know, staying hungry and thirsty. It's way more than that. Many of these ethical vices that, unfortunately, many of us carry, these vices, they are result in us losing the real essence of the month of Ramadan. And at the end of the day, we stay hungry and thirsty, but we do not enable ourselves to reap all those benefits. So, for instance, if you're getting mad at your, servants or somebody who's trying to help you at home or at the office or, you know, outside, in essence, you have lost the philosophy of fasting. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the ethical fasting, which is a level higher than the jurisprudential fasting. We should be always, always, always trying to get to this next level of fasting, right? Ethical fasting is observed by those who are serious about their morals, ethics, and etiquettes. You know, the spiritual development, it has a prerequisite, which is the ethical and moral perfection. Now, let me ask you this question. Would backbiting invalidate one's fast? Well, if you look at the jurisprudential fasting, no. One could be fasting in the apparent meaning of fasting and still be backbiting others, right? In terms of fiqh and in terms of jurisprudence, your fast is not invalid if you're backbiting while you are keeping a fast. Similarly, would lying invalidate one's fast? Would not helping the oppressed break one's fast? Would supporting the oppressor break one's fast? Would envy, jealousy, showing off, hasad, riyah, ghiba invalidate one's fast? Well, the answer to all these questions is no. All of these vices, collectively, even if they're performed collectively, they won't invalidate the fast of a faster. But performing these deeds or not performing the required deeds like helping the oppressed, it would invalidate your fast in essence, which means in jurisprudential sense, you will be fasting, but in reality, in essence, your fast is not giving you any benefit, right? The faster would be ultra careful regarding these vices and diseases of the soul in the month of Ramadan, somebody who has excelled to this level. And this is what we pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to give us the tawfiq and enable us to have the, at least, the fast of, which we called it, the ethical fasting. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Martyrdom of Imam Ali, peace upon him. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate, Salam and welcome to the program. heartfelt condolences to all our listeners on a very tragic day. In fact, today is that fateful day in history which saw the end of the only instance of the administration of social justice with the martyrdom of the commander of the all true believers, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, the cousin, son-in-law, and divinely designated vicegerent of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Before we present you a special program on the tragic 21st of Ramadan, here is Ayah 15 of Surah Hujurat, where God Almighty says, "The true believers are only those who have attained faith in Allah and His Prophet and have never doubted, and who wage jihad with their possessions and their persons in the way of Allah. It is they who are the truthful." We are once again commemorating the martyrdom anniversary of the barometer of belief, the fulcrum of faith, the paragon of the pious, the epitome of eloquence, the byword of bravery, the manifestation of magnanimity, the symbol of sincerity, the jewel of justice, and the excellent exemplar of the administration the like of which the world has yet to see. The grand man who passed away on the grand night of Ramadan continues to transcend history and all historical developments despite the passing away of a millennium and four centuries since the day when struck on the head by the poisoned sword of a cowardly renegade while engrossed in the ritual morning prayer of the 19th of the fasting month, he expressed those immortal words: "Fustu wa Rabbul Ka'bah, by the Lord of the Ka'bah, I have triumphed." Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, triumphed because, as the divinely designated heir of the Almighty's last and greatest messenger, he drew the permanent line between the rule of the righteous and the misrule of the miscreants. Deprived for 25 long years of his right of political leadership of the Ummah, following the passing away of his cousin and father-in-law, the Prophet, he never harbored grudge against the usurpers. Whenever they came begging at his doorstep to resolve the problems facing the Muslims, he readily gave them the finest advice, to the extent that the second Caliph Umar ibn Khattab would say, "If not for Ali, I would have perished." When masses thronged his threshold to take over the caliphate, he refused, and when their pleas increased in view of the critical situation facing the Islamic realm, he reluctantly took up the reins of government to salvage the faith of Muslims, on condition he would rule only in accordance with the laws of God in the Holy Quran and the precepts set by the Prophet, rather than the un-Islamic innovations made by the previous three caliphs. Here is what he said on establishing the model government of social justice: "By Allah, I had no liking for the caliphate nor any interest in government. But you yourself invited me to it and prepared me for it. When the caliphate came to me, I kept the book of Allah in my view and all that Allah had put therein for us, and all that according to which He has commanded us to take decisions. And I followed it and also acted on whatever the Prophet had laid down as sunnah." The famous exegete of the Noble Quran, Abdullah ibn Abbas, has narrated, I saw Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, mending his shoes. I said, it is better you spend your time on repairing the social affairs. He ignored me until he finished with his shoes and asked me how much the value of his pair of shoes was. I said that it had no value. He insisted that I may price it as it was. I said, well, a fraction of a dirham? Imam Ali, peace upon him, said, by Allah, this pair of shoes is more favorable to me than leading your political affairs, unless I can establish right and eradicate falsehood. In one of his sermons, Imam Ali, peace upon him, elaborates on the concept of jihad, or striving sincerely in the way of God, which ought to inspire the spirit of resistance and the resolve to solve crises in contemporary Muslim societies, which are facing a variety of intricate plots from cultural, social, and economic to wars imposed upon them by the enemies of humanity, such as the Zionists and the US, as well as their minions, the Takfiri terrorists, modern-day Khawarij, to which the Imam's assassin Ibn Muljam belonged. The Imam says, jihad is one of the doors of paradise which Allah has opened for His chosen servants. It is the dress of piety and the protective armor of Allah and His trustworthy shield. Whoever abandons it, Allah covers him with the dress of disgrace and the clothes of distress. Beware, I called you to fight these people night and day, secretly and openly, and exhorted you to attack them before they attacked you, because by Allah, no people have been attacked in the hearths of their homes, but they suffered disgrace. But you put it off to others and forsook it till destruction befell you and your cities were occupied. You have become the target at which arrows are shot. You are being attacked, but you do not attack. Allah is being disobeyed and you remain agreeable to it. When I ask you to move against them in summer, you say, it is hot weather, spare us, till the heat subsides. When I order you to march in winter, you say, it is severely cold, give us some time till cold clears from us. Alas, despite such words of wisdom, the Iraqis, because of their weak faith, failed to heed the admonishments of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the result was calamitous for them and the other sections of the Ummah, not just through the seizure of the Caliphate by the Umayyad charlatan Muawiyah ibn Abu Sufyan, but by the several centuries of deprivation they continued to suffer well into modern times. The words of Imam Ali, peace upon him, are a warning to Iranian people, whom God Almighty rescued through Imam Khomeini from the despotic Pahlavi regime and the hegemonic Americans, that if the laws of God are violated, if the sunnah of the Prophet is ignored, and if the precepts of Imam Ali, peace upon him, and the other 11 infallible Imams of the Ahlul Bayt are set aside, on the misconstrued notion of progress on the patterns of the decadent West, then the result would be suicidal in the transient world and damnation in afterlife. Therefore, As Muslims, we ought to tread the footsteps of the person whom Prophet Muhammad likened to the Noble Quran and who left for our guidance the lasting legacy of the rule of social justice. Thus, there are immortal lessons to be learned, not just from the discourses, but from all the actions and deeds of Imam Ali, peace upon him, whose martyrdom we commemorate.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Aperture.
As humans, the Earth is our home. It is the only home we have. The Earth is where we live, breathe, eat, and raise the future generation. Our entire life support system is dependent on the well-being of our natural environment and all of the species living on this beautiful blue planet. But what have we done to it? How have we preserved it? I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Unfortunately, our planet is in grave danger. Many species of animals and plants are nearing extinction. Our clean air and water supply is at risk, and more of our beautiful open spaces are disappearing as new buildings and factories are built. What is worse is that the Earth is getting warmer and warmer as we speak. This week's exclusive documentary explores the perilous state of our planet. Stay with us for the first part.
Issue the tsunami warning.
Gives us a clear idea of what's happening.
The cloud is now moving south. It's harmless to people on the
ground. Covered with thousands of miles, why doesn't that energy dissipate?
The Earth isn't feeling well.
That is a year.
Its fever has risen, and its situation is getting worse by the day.
Nowadays, we hear people saying the Earth's temperature is rising.
The average temperature of the Earth was about 15 degrees Celsius in the beginning of the 20th century. During the Ice Age, the average temperature of the Earth was only 5 degrees less.
Take into consideration this 15 degrees and compare it to the 10 degree average during the Ice Age. Now, if this 15 degrees, God forbid, reaches 19 or 20 degrees, what age could you call that? The ebullient age?
Naturally, the subsistence of life will end way before the ebullient age.
Of course, the Earth has other problems as well, but climate change or global warming is a major problem, which increases the frequency of drought, storms, and other consequences and natural disasters that take place on the Earth's surface.
همین وجود
The existence of icebergs in the north and south poles calls reflection of solar energy, which is known as albedo. Without an ice cover, this energy will be absorbed by the Earth's surface and accelerate global warming, altering the average temperature on planet Earth. We can say the Earth has a fever. It may be 1 degree or 1 2/100 degrees.
There's a very simple formula. Q is heat energy, which is equal to the mass of substance multiplied by C, which is a specific heat capacity multiplied by delta T. A 2-degree delta T, for instance, is multiplied by a huge mass at a specific heat capacity, which sums up to what? A very large Q. And what does that all mean? It means that all these signals I'm giving you are alarming. And it means that I'm continuously moving from the green line into the orange and red lines and into the danger zone.
Greenhouse gases are gases that can trap wavelengths larger than 4 microns within themselves. These are wavelengths that are radiated to the Earth from the Sun, and when reflected from the surface of the Earth, elements become trapped within the wavelengths. They trap greenhouse gases and absorb heat, which leads to the gradual warming of the Earth.
Just like inside a greenhouse, as in the ones used for farming, when solar radiation penetrates into it, the trapped heat is not completely removed, and it causes the inside of the greenhouse to become warmer than the outside. Greenhouse gases play the same role in the Earth's atmosphere.
Greenhouse gases per se are very useful. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, which we usually refer to as carbon dioxide, is very useful because without these gases, the temperature of the Earth would fall to minus 19 degrees Celsius. Minus 19 degrees Celsius means a total freeze. It means no agricultural or farming product would be able to grow. Obviously, it wouldn't provide the requirements for human existence on the Earth. The existence of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere and the partial trapping of energy reflections from the Earth have caused the Earth's temperature to rise to 15 degrees Celsius. In other words, greenhouse gases have caused a 34 degree temperature rise. This process has obviously created the ideal situation we have for all living creatures to thrive. A forest is one factor responsible for absorbing greenhouse gases. It is necessary for soaking up greenhouse gases. Unfortunately, forests around the world are being brutally desecrated for their wood and their land. You can see many instances of deforestation around the world. Deforestation has taken place to enable farming, but also for building factories and cities. When these forests are destroyed, the global sources for absorbing greenhouse gases are weakened. With the proliferation of greenhouse gases and the increase of human activities on the surface of the Earth, which has provided the growth and spread of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, the basis for absorbing and trapping thermal energy that is reflected from the surface of the Earth is further provided in the atmosphere.
The atmosphere's capacity for greenhouse gases is 2,900 gigatons. And until now, in the year 2010, about 65% of its capacity has been emitted. So from 2010 until the year 2100, the atmosphere only has the capacity to handle another 35%.
And obviously the basis has been provided for the Earth's average temperature of 15 degrees to rise to 15.5, 15.7 or 15.9 degrees and even to 16 degrees at times.
از این 1900 گیگاتون منتشر شده در کل جهان در
اتمسفر. A large portion of the 1900 gigatons emitted into the atmosphere belongs to countries which have caused more emissions starting from the 1840s and 1850s.
1840 و 1850 اینها رو بیشتر از کشورهای دیگر منتشر کرد. کشورهای در حال توسعه.
Developing countries with 81% of the world's population have only emitted 26% of these gases.
Therefore, we're facing a very serious humanitarian hazard, and we need to take serious measures to stop the emission of greenhouse gases.
Progress is being made, however. Beijing authorities are closing factories and outlawing burning coal for heating.
Naturally, a rise in the average temperature of the surface of the Earth from moderate levels can have bad consequences, and temperatures higher than that can pave the way for various disasters on the Earth's surface.
We're working in a totally unsustainable way. We do things to feel at ease, but we only have one planet Earth. We can't later immigrate and leave this planet. If we destroy it, where else can we go? This is it. And the destruction we're causing with technological development is enough to put our lives at risk now. As a human being, I'd ask, what sort of technological development have we accomplished? What sort of technology have we achieved? Or what have we done for human comfort that hasn't harmed us in any way? Give me one example.
The skyline is littered with factories, and toxic smoke pours into the air day and night. For those living here, it's a choice between pollution.
A federal appeals court upheld the Environmental Protection Agency's emission standards for hazardous air pollutants from coal and oil-fired power plants. The court rejected state and industry challenges to rule
designs
to clean up
mercury. In the European Parliament said reducing supply in the CO2 trading market would boost prices.
وقتی شما در جای آلوده زندگی می‌کنید یعنی چی؟
what does it mean to live in a polluted place? It means that particles, say 5 microns, 2.5 microns and 1 micron increase. Carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide increase. Now it depends on the quality of the gasoline and the gas that you use. The sulfur and nitrogen derivatives, ozone and finally soot and particulates all scatter in the air and they eventually enter the body either through the nose or the mouth. و هممون این هوا رو بالاخره یا از طریق بینی یا از طریق دهن وارد بدنمون میکنیم. So body cells that start from the nose, eyes and mouth and reach the depth of the lungs are all affected and these substances enter the bloodstream through the respiratory system. It affects the brain. We become tired fast. We become impatient. We quickly lose our temper and verbally assault each other. There's no need for one to be ill. Those who are ill are at greater risk.
We see B2B, business to business. Just business to business. It's usually called B2B. This is a disaster. Even if it means death and costs us our lives, which is our most important index, we have a brain. We don't use it. The only thing we see in business is the money. Everything depends on how deep one's pockets are. همه چیز با جیبه.
Development is a natural process in human growth, which has existed for thousands of years. It's now been accelerated, becoming faster and stranger. But during this development process, some of us have become rich. Some are filling up their bank accounts and becoming wealthy. It's interesting, though, that these same people, sometimes directly, but most times indirectly, have to somehow return this money.
The oil leaked for 87 days, the worst offshore spill in U.S. history. BP was later found to be grossly negligent for the explosion aboard the Deepwater Horizon platform. And today, it agreed to a settlement that will include a $5.5 billion fine for violations of the Clean Water Act, $7.1 billion to the U.S. government, and five states to repair coastlines smeared by oil, $4.9 billion to settle economic claims by those five states, and up to $1 billion to 400 local governments. Louisiana, the most heavily damaged, gets almost $7 billion, the biggest share.
This is by no means chance and accident. Our experience in development over the past 100 or 200 years shows that technological advancement and city living have been the cause of this. Name any technology you like, or whatever has made human existence easier, and you'll find it's harmed the environment.
China has announced the successful containment of its worst ever reported oil spill, although much work remains to be done before an ongoing cleanup is complete. At a media briefing, the vice mayor of the northeastern coastal city of Dalian, where the spill occurred, said workers had used more than 40 kilometers of oil barriers and 65 tons of absorbent pads to stop the slick reaching international waters. Yet with oil remaining on beaches and in the water, he also acknowledged a full cleanup will be an arduous task.
Go back 160 years in time to the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. The industrial age in the 1850s to see an impact.
It's been about a century that we humans have opted for consumerism on the Earth, and as we have moved forward in recent decades, consumer demand has risen.
Until a point, we lived along with the Earth and the nature. From a point onwards, we just forgot about what the Earth is, where it's come from, and where this kind of usage will lead us to. We just want everything. The high consumer demand that we're witnessing these days is just destroying the Earth's natural resources.
But a leading scientist suggests the reasons for the drought may be even more worrying for Brazil in the long run. Has continued deforestation in the Amazon and in the Atlantic forest drastically altered the climate?
We created the packaging industry to be able to easily relocate food products and conserve them for longer periods, so we would be able to keep a packet of food or fruit juice for, say, 2 weeks without it being spoiled. What's been the outcome? Go take a look at the landfills to see what we've done to the Earth by producing all this garbage, garbage that can't be recycled. It was done for our comfort, but it's also put our future in danger.
If we move back a few decades, there were a limited number of countries that were consumer-based and that used a lot of energy and products like the United States and in Europe. But these days, global consumption on Earth has sharply increased as countries in East Asia, especially China, have started boosting their consumption.
About 56% of these greenhouse gases are produced by fossil fuels.
Naturally, the rise in the use of fossil fuels is due to energy requirements of machines used for ever-expanding development projects. To boost the machine age, the industrial age. Due to this boosting process, the developed world has had to increase its use of different kinds of fossil fuels. This has paved the way for partial deforestation, which aims to provide the agricultural requirements to cover total food needs of a growing global population. This causes change to the optimal 15-degree world average temperature.
In the northeastern prefecture of Miyagi, and what you're looking at right now on the screen is in the city of Sendai.
A couple of feet of water, so they have to stand out there until they can manage to get the boat across and then take a big group of them into an entrance ramp of high tension.
In the limelight.
The toxic output from fires is dangerous, contributing to an estimated loss of more than 15,000 lives in the U.S. each year. Some scientists say that number will double by the end of the century. In this regard, we have prepared for you an article written by Gabriel Cannon under the heading, Study says wildfire smoke in U.S. Pacific Northwest erasing reductions in emissions. Please stay with us to hear more about the details. Scientists at the National Center for Atmospheric Research have found the billowing black smoke that has cloaked the U.S. Pacific Northwest during wildfire disasters in past years has caused atmospheric carbon monoxide levels to spike, with the contaminants offsetting recent reductions in emissions. As the American West faces increasing threats from big blazes that are fueled by a climate that's growing warmer and drier, researchers have documented the impact of smoke on public health. But scientists are increasingly finding that the fires may be part of a feedback loop that could accelerate the change in conditions, and that health impacts, officials have long warned, would worsen the climate crisis, may in fact already be there. Dr. Rebecca Bajholz, a project scientist at National Center for Atmospheric Research, said, "Our research contributes to the growing body of research that shows that fires, in particular Pacific Northwest region fires, are becoming more important for North American air quality." Bajholz explained, "Looking at carbon monoxide, a trace gas emitted during fires, researchers analyzed the impact on atmospheric chemistry from 2002 to 2018. Though the scientists relied on carbon monoxide data to guide them, the contaminant also provided a framework to understand how other sources of pollution might be tied to the flames. Her team, which also included scientists from across the country and around the globe, found that the dangerous pollutant peaks in August, when fires are typically raging in the region, but dips during other months. She said the deviation from the annual cycle is telling us that fires are compromising the ability of atmosphere to self-clean. Globally, carbon monoxide concentrations receded by half a percentage point a year over the 16-year study period. But across North America, the scientists found that August was an outlier. Carbon monoxide levels in the atmosphere follow a seasonal flow, driven to ebb and increase through a photochemical process. Prior to 2011, the regions fell in line with this pattern, and levels of the pollutants peaked in the spring and waned in late summer. In a more recent period, the researchers analyzed from 2012 to 2018, a new trend began to emerge. In August, when CO was expected to be driven to its lowest points, there were instead spikes. The scientists found that this not only affects atmospheric carbon monoxide, but was found closer to the Earth's surface as well. The deviation from the worldwide trend was the strongest in the Pacific Northwest, where wildfire risks are high during that month. But the effect lingered in data collected in areas across the country and into the northeast of the North American continent. The study's findings were supported by four different global fire emissions inventories, which consistently showed carbon monoxide fire emissions peaked in the Pacific Northwest in August. Data from two other inventories that catalog emissions from human activity show carbon monoxide was not increasing in the region during the study period, helping the researchers rule out other causes of the August surge and its spread. A growing body of research has shown how wildfires raging across the West can impact the air locally and afar, with the potential to affect millions across the country. Last year, the sun glowed ominously red as far as New York City, shrouded in haze from land burning on the other side of the country. In 2020, which had the worst wildfire season on record, levels of the most dangerous type of air pollution rose by 7% in the U.S., even after the pandemic shutdowns delivered steep reductions in fossil fuel use. The toxic output from fires is dangerous, contributing to an estimated loss of more than 15,000 lives in the U.S. each year. Some scientists say that number will double by the end of the century. According to a separate study published last year, smoke from Western fires has also been attributed to up to 5,900 asthma-related emergency department visits a year. Nearly three-quarters of these visits and hospital admissions tied to smoke inhalation were outside the western U.S. Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Orthman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued and finally on December 20th, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the U.S. and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there. Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turned barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most. Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms. A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. The World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for 4 beats or 2 beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or American Sign Language, in the production. DJ Kurse, the producer at the Deaf West Theater, says the performance is a little bit more poetic and a little bit more kind of picturesque.
A startup in the U.S. state of California is turning science fiction into reality by sending tiny robots on a fantastic voyage inside humans to treat brain disorders. The smart cells are small enough to be injected and can be carefully guided through the brain using magnetic coils placed outside of the patient's skull. The coils are linked to a computer that can remotely maneuver the robots through delicate pathways into the affected part of the brain. The micro-robots are also removed by rewinding them through the same route. The developers at Bionaut Labs say these robots are extremely important when it comes to zero-failure-sensitive surgeries.
For localized conditions such as cancer tumors, stroke, atherosclerotic plaque buildup, localized pain, and many other conditions, there is a real need to have a micro-robotic, precise, remote-controlled mechanism that can treat a condition only at a specific point and nowhere else.
The startup has already tested the robots on large animals. Inventors hope to use the robot to pierce fluid-filled cysts within the brain when clinical trials on humans begin in 2 years. If approved, they could offer key advantages over more invasive and dangerous treatments for brain disorders.